Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from John F. Kennedy: if a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. Interesting thoughts on personal self-interest. It's January 17th. Larry Klayman is on the line with us. He founded Judicial Watch back in the day. The guy who originally busted Bill Clinton and that led directly to Monica Lewinsky, or I suppose indirectly, and then busted Dick Cheney and was able to actually pry out a couple of details about how Dick Cheney's office had been carving up the oil fields of Iraq and figuring out which countries and which companies they were going to sell them off to before there was even a public discussion about invading Iraq as part of our energy policy back before 9/11. And he now has a new lawsuit in the making here. Larry Klayman, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome, and it's good to have you back on the show, Larry. Your old group, Judicial Watch, your new group is called Freedom Watch. Do I have that right?
Yeah, the new group is Freedom Watch. Interestingly enough, several years ago, West Wing created a character after me, Harry Claypool of Freedom Watch. I like the name.
Uh-huh.
And I use it now as a new group. The new group is run by many of the same people as were with Judicial Watch during
that. That's funny. So Hunter S. Thompson became Duke in the Doonesbury comic strip, and although he has passed on, you became a character on West Wing in caricature, and you've decided to adopt the caricature.
Hey, why not? You know, I think it's important. What you do is very important to reach the American people.
Yes.
And to get them to understand, you know, even in a pop culture environment, what we're dealing with in Washington, D.C. in particular. It's just a corrupt place. It's just unbelievable.
I agree with you in most regards. And what's so interesting about this, and you and I have had this conversation a couple of times over the last few years, is that you're coming at it from what many would describe as the far right. I'm coming at it from what many would describe as the far left. And we agree in principle, I think, pretty much across the board, on the need for transparency if we're going to have a functioning democratic republic.
Right, but you know, it's funny because during the Clinton years, because I brought so many lawsuits against the Clintons, people thought I was the far right. I'm not the far right. I'm closer to being a libertarian in reality. Yeah. But I was a Republican for a while.
Okay. Well, I would define libertarians as the far right, but it doesn't matter.
I think I left it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Increasingly, we're all Americans now. And hopefully, so tell us about this lawsuit. I think most Americans, in fact, I think a lot of Americans are confusing TARP with the stimulus bill, and it's one of the reasons why the stimulus bill is not polling as well as it might have if it had been called a jobs bill, because there's just a broad consensus that giving $350 billion to a bunch of banks, which frankly we could have bought most of them for that amount of money outright, that giving them that money, and then when you ask them, you know, what happened to the money, or when you ask the Fed what happened to the couple $1 trillion in loan guarantees that they extended to these banks, they simply say, none of your damn business. And that outrages everybody.
Well, absolutely. And in my final years at Judicial Watch, as you're pointing out, before I ran for the Senate here in Florida and then went back with Freedom Watch, I took on Cheney, I took on Bush, very dishonest administration, very opaque, didn't want anybody to know what they were doing. And, of course, you know, as they were going out the door, they were lining the pockets of their friends with TARP. And they can't account for where the money went.
Yeah, I described it on the air as the biggest bank robbery in the history of the United States being conducted right out and open, right in front of us by the outgoing administration. And nobody picked that meme up. Nobody picked up that. Apparently, you were saying the same thing, but this was a bank robbery.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I used to joke the Democrats when Hillary Clinton left office the first time, she took the White House furniture. And I said, you know, the Democrats, they do petty larceny. We Republicans, we're into grand larceny.
Apparently.
And that's what's happened here, is that this money's been handed out. Obviously, a lot of lobbyists had something to do with where the money went and how. And I wanted to find out for the American people, and lawsuits will undoubtedly follow, how that money was decided to be doled out and where it went. And the reasons, and under the Freedom of Information Act, which lets you get documents from the government, they have to release their final decisions on how they decided to spend the money. And they haven't done that. And the American people are being denied the opportunity to know where their hard-earned taxpayer dollars went when they can't even afford to feed their families right now.
So give us just a quick wrap-up, Larry Klayman, of, well, first of all, I'm assuming Freedom Watch, it's FreedomWatch.
It's FreedomWatchUSA.org.
Yeah, there we go.
FreedomWatchUSA.org.
Give us a quick recap on whatever happened with your lawsuit against Cheney and his energy policy, and where you're at with this and where you expect it to go, and if there might be similar results.
Yeah, the lawsuit with Cheney wound up, we won every motion at the lower court level. He was required to turn over the names of all the people he was meeting with to secretly make energy policies. You pointed out, Tom, at the beginning, part of the energy policy is how they were going to divide up the oil fields in Iraq, undoubtedly.
And
of course, they didn't even do that well. They didn't even do that well, the
right.
Gang that can't shoot straight. So that case wound up going all the way to the Supreme Court. Antonin Scalia went duck hunting with Dick Cheney before he rendered his decision on the matter, along with the other justices. And it reminded me of Bush v. Gore. It was basically a cover-up.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Federal Advisory Committee Act was basically gutted by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's of questionable constitutionality after that ruling. Mm-hmm. And that was what allows people to get information about what goes on behind closed doors with federal advisory committees appointed by the president. And this energy group was a federal advisory committee. So it went to the Supreme Court. I was not there at the time. My former colleague at Judicial Watch argued it. I don't think it would have made a difference who argued it. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court covered it up.
Because the fix was in.
Yeah.
And now you're suing again basically the old Bush administration on the first $350 billion of TARP, although you've also put on notice the Obama administration that you will be suing or are suing them. But they're saying they're gonna put everything on the web. They're gonna make everything completely transparent. Is there evidence that they're going to do that, A, the Obama administration, and B, are we ever gonna find out what happened to $350 billion? Not to mention the, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's almost $2 trillion in outright cash and guarantees that the Fed gave out as well that was even less transparent and didn't require legislation. You know, what's going to happen with that?
Well, you know, this is Washington, and it doesn't matter whether or not President Obama is an honest person or not. I tend to think he probably is. He made a mistake. He cut a deal with the Clintons. He brought back all the Clinton cronies. They're now back in the administration. And even David Corn of The Nation is concerned about that, you know, and he's far left about them having done that. And undoubtedly, boys will be boys, girls will be girls. That'd be politically correct. And there's going to be some shenanigans there because the lobbyists get their hooks into the politicians, into the cabinet secretaries. The money's going to be doled out based on special influence in large part. And that's what we need to see. And it's important for Freedom Watch now to step in and say, hey, you know, Larry Klayman, Freedom Watch, and our staff, we're going to be looking at that, and you better play it straight here because you're dealing with almost $1 trillion. And as you know, Tom, this is probably just the first installment because the 700 and some billion isn't going to do the job. There's going to be more money that's gone out of the taxpayers' coffers.
Yeah,
undoubtedly.
On all levels. Well, Larry, I wish you well on it, and thanks for checking in with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that. Yeah. And I hope people can check out our website at freedomwatchusa.org. I think they'll like what we're doing.
You betcha. Freedomwatchusa.org is the website. Larry Klayman is the guy, the founder of Freedom Watch USA, the current reincarnation of Judicial Watch. And Larry, keep up, you know, from a liberal to a libertarian, keep up the good work. Good talking with you. By the way, we're gonna hit a break here in just a second, but I just a thought. Got an email here from Mike, and this apropos of my question: might Harry Reid be playing jujitsu with the, you know, using the energy of the Republicans against them with the Republicans? He talks about how Obama was a devoted student and admirer of Lincoln. And what Lincoln did with the Confederate states was he basically forced them to start the war. So they lost the moral high ground. And, you know, the previously divided North got pulled together as a consequence of that. And that arguably is one of the reasons why Lincoln won the war ultimately. So is Obama doing the same thing by reaching out to the Republicans, treating them with great respect, and letting the American people see them as just pure obstructionists? Is it possible that Harry Reid is the ultimate Sun Tzu and we're watching the art of war being played out in front of us?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Of all the things I think about every day, stroke wasn't one of them. Then my brother, who always took care of himself, had one. I was telling my doctor, and he said 4 out of 5 people who have a stroke never show symptoms. And he said 80% of strokes can be prevented when identified early. So I decided to get screened by Lifeline Screening. In about an hour, Lifeline Screening did a series of non-invasive screenings using sonograms to look inside my arteries and determine my risk for stroke and heart disease.
If you're over 50, Lifeline Screening has screening packages that can help detect the warning signs, so you can prevent a stroke and heart disease from happening to you.
When I got the results, I went to my doctor who developed a treatment plan. Now, I know I'm doing the right things to keep healthy.
Lifeline Screening's community health screenings are coming to your neighborhood. Appointments are limited. Make yours now. Call 888-912-TEST. That's 888-912-TEST. 888-912-TEST.
He's an outsider.
This is the demise of a civilization.
With an insider's perspective.
Demise of civilization? What are we talking about here?
Ron Reagan, evenings 6 to 8.
Well, no wonder Bernie Marcos is so upset.
Affording people the chance to unionize so that they could get better wages and benefits would be the death of America.
Ron Reagan, right after Randy Rhodes.
You've got to wonder about these titans of capitalism. You got to wonder what's going on in their head.
AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hey, Carl Wolfson here. Thanks to KPOJ listeners, last month, Eyes on Broadway collected dozens of pairs of eyeglasses that will be distributed in March when Dr. Tom Barreto travels to Peru to perform eye exams. If it's been more than a year since you've had your eyes checked, call Eyes on Broadway today at 503-284-2300 to schedule an appointment. Eyes on Broadway is a proud supporter of Progressive Radio, which is just one reason why I've been a loyal patient for 8 years. Call 284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
Hi, Tom Dwyer Automotive Services is your ally in a bad economy. We'll make sure you're not wasting your money or unknowingly running your vehicle into the ground. We provide value by offering quality service in a logical, prioritized manner, focusing on safety recommendations first, breakdown items next, and then your maintenance needs. Trust is the main reason people use our service. Our clients know we deliver comprehensive, honest, no BS service. We won't sell unneeded or random nonsense. Our service advisors aren't paid sales commission, so you can trust they're recommending services you need, not just building a paycheck. We're an ASE Blue Seal of Excellence facility, and our technicians efficiently service your vehicle right the first time. We offer a no-hassle 18-month, 18,000-mile warranty, free shuttle service, and in this economy, our same-as cash financing can help. Let our existing clients tell you why they choose us. Go to our website at tomdwyer.com and watch the detailed client testimonials and call us at 503-230-2300. Please let us help you preserve your car and your cash.
There are debt solutions for almost every situation. No matter how much money you owe in credit card debt, all the information you really need is yours free when you call right now for your free debt review. When we learned about the debt solutions they don't want you to know about, we were so shocked at how the credit card companies work to keep you in debt that we have decided to give everyone that calls today a free debt review. Absolutely free. That's right. Get your debt solution review absolutely free. Just call 1-800-620-2860. That's 1-800-620-2860. And get the free debt cures review everyone in debt should have. To find out how you can get out of debt now, just call 1-800-620-2860. That's 1-800-620-2860. Get out of debt fast with your free credit card debt review. Call 1-800-620-2860. Again, 1-800-620-2860.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Viagra for your brain. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Welcome back, my friends. Our program, by the way, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act, Teamster.org, their website. And so Scott Irvine, who is the production director over at RFJ, Radio Free Jacksonville Productions, programming our North Florida's Progressive Talk Network down there, sitting around one day, and the phone rings, and he has the good sense to have a recording device attached to his phone, and this is the call he gets.
Hello, world. We, the United States of America, your top quality supplier of the ideals of liberty and democracy, would like to apologize for our 2001 through 2008 interruption in service. The software responsible was replaced January 20th, and early tests of the newly installed software indicate that we are now operating correctly. We apologize for any inconvenience caused by the outage, and we look forward to resuming full-service democracy and improve in years to come. We thank you for your patience and understanding. Sincerely, the United States of America.
There you go. So, of course, Scott put that thing together. It's that's cute. I like that. I think that's great. Here's in this category. I'm looking at today's Financial Times. You know, just reading the newspaper. When Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal, I stopped reading it. And the Financial Times has always been a good. It's a conservative paper. I know it's a conservative rag, but you know, it's if you want to know what the rich are saying to the rich, if you want to know what the power structure in the world is saying to itself, read the Financial Times. And so here I am, page, like, I think it's page 6. I tore it out so I don't have the page number on it anymore. It is in the front section, half-page ad, big half-page ad. And here's this picture of a twin Beechcraft, twin turboprop Beechcraft airplane. Now, this is not a jet. This is a prop plane. It's like the old, if you're old enough to remember, the old Sky King plane, right? Only a little bit bigger. It's a Beechcraft King Air 350. And the headline says, and in big type, it's like, you know, 55 point, sensible enough to impress any congressional committee. That's the headline. And then the copy for the ad says, if three Detroit CEOs had arrived in Washington in the Beechcraft King Air 350, they might have received a warmer reception from their legislative hosts. The King Air 350 has a lower operating cost per seat mile than any light jet, along with best-in-class fuel efficiency, making it one of the greenest aircraft in the sky. At liberal amounts of cabin space, the largest in its category, combined with Beechcraft value, quality, and reliability to win over even the staunchest conservative, make the King Air 350 the best deal in town. Now, I find that amazing. I think that's just great. That's some good advertising. So here's the question. Is Harry Reid, and broadly speaking, you know, the Democratic leadership, are they executing a brilliant master stroke here by allowing the Republicans to play obstructionists with the stimulus legislation and keeping their powder dry for the really big stuff to come? Because there is a guaranteed filibuster on a number of these pieces of legislation that are going to come down the road. Anything that's, that resembles, that even smells like national health care, Republicans will be hysterical about. Anything that substantially reforms Social Security by lifting the cap, they will have, they'll have heart attacks over. I mean, on the floor of the Senate, you're going to see all these millionaires, and literally they are. There's probably not more than three or four members of the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders being one of them, who are not millionaires. And they're just been clutching their hearts and falling over as the thought that they have to start paying Social Security taxes like the little people do on every dollar they earn after $100,000 hits them. They're going to freak. They're just going to totally freak. Right now, U.S. senators don't pay any Social Security taxes on about $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. I think the Senate salary is around $180,000, isn't it? And the House is around $160,000 in that neighborhood anyway. They're not paying any Social Security tax on any of that over that first $100,000, more or less. So that's going to produce a filibuster. I mean, there's just no shortage of let's get back to a rational policy in America. I mean, rolling back the Bush tax cuts, which only takes us to 35%, 36% income tax rates, and rolls back the tax cut for people who just, you know, earn their living by sitting around the pool on their butt waiting for the dividend check to arrive, that's going to cause a filibuster. And rolling back the Reagan tax cuts, oh my God, if they should even consider that, which I think is the most important thing to do to return stability to the United States and to start paying down our debt. In fact, frankly, I think they should roll back the Lyndon Johnson tax cut. We had a very good tax policy under the Dwight Eisenhower Republican administration. It worked just fine, thank you very much. The average CEO made 30 times as much as the average worker. Industry was growing like a weed. America was solid. The middle class was solid and stable. And what was the main thing that made it happen? A 91% top marginal tax rate. Not on average working people. Not on people who are earning $30,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 in today's dollars, but on people who are earning millions. And it doesn't even hit them until they start earning millions. That's why it's called a marginal tax rate. So please, no more hysterical emails from conservatives going, "What? I'm making $52,000 a year, and you want to hit me with a 74% tax rate?" No, I don't. Not just the millionaires. Thank you very much. Just the millionaires. And, you know, should any of us ever, you know, have the good fortune of becoming one, that's fine. You know, we're using the commons in that proportion. Let's pay the tax. Pretty straightforward stuff. Your thoughts, 866-303-2270.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Four minutes past the hour. By the way, in our third hour, Daniel Pinchbeck is going to drop by. He's the author of the new book, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, if I'm pronouncing that right, the Mayan god. The Mayan calendar runs out in 2012. There's some concern that the world might end, and so we're asking, what do you think? And Sean's favorite response to the answer on our blog over at TomHartman.com today will receive a copy, an autographed copy. A personalized autograph copy of We the People, A Call to Take Back America, our 160-some-odd page illustrated novel about the history of the United States and what we can do. And we got a note here from ba-dum-bum-bum. It's not signed. Oh, B-roll. It says, Free Speech TV is airing an episode on the keynote series featuring Dennis Kucinich and Tom Hartman addressing strategies for improving the global situation. Apparently, this is from when Dennis and I were both keynoters at the Chicago Green Festival late last year. The program airs Tuesday, February 17, 8 to 9 p.m., and replays Wednesday, February 18 at noon, and will be repeated on Saturday. And then he adds, my suggestion for improving the world is to end all pigeon jokes. Aha! obviously, B-roll is one who has been seduced by the dark side, or perhaps controlled by the robotic pigeons. It is not a joke. They are here to spy on us. I am telling you, all you have to do is watch. Wherever there is an important meeting around the world, what do you see? Pigeons carefully attending to who's showing up, what they're saying. Pigeons all over the place. And you've never seen a dead one. You've never seen a baby one. They are robots from the planet Xenu spying on us. Robert in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. I have a challenge of sorts for you.
Okay.
And it's an actual challenge. I really am curious to know. Wondering if you can tell me one piece of legislation authored by a Republican that helps, like, real human beings. Not corporations, not rich people, but, like, real people.
Well, that was the question back, geez, it must be 5 years ago or so, that Tom Tancredo was on our show. And we were talking about immigration, which he is wont to talk about. And I kind of interrupted the conversation, and I said, Congressman, can you please name for me one piece? Because, I was making the point that he didn't even at that point want to go after employers. He didn't want to go after rich people. He just wanted to go after working people, whether they were legal or illegal, to use his terminology. And my take on it all is we don't have illegal people in the United States. We have illegal employers in the United States, and that's what's driving the problem. But in any case, I said, can you name one piece of legislation that the Republicans have sponsored that has become law, whose primary beneficiary was the average person in America as opposed to a corporation of the rich? And he was incapable of answering the question.
Really?
He tried, the one thing he tried was some limit on abortion or something like that. And I said, I think that that's in one of those sufficiently arguable categories that I'm not going to give it to you. Because it really depends on your opinion about, whether abortion should be legal or not. So we had a contest on this show for the better part of 2 years, and I think we stopped at two or three. It just kind of ran out of steam, I guess. And where, if anybody could come up with, and it was on our message boards, there were long threads about it, if anybody could, and everybody was watching, one piece of legislation submitted by the Republicans that whose primary beneficiary was average working people, the middle class or the working poor, or for that matter, people who were out of work altogether, which is a growing constituency in the United States. One piece of legislation from the Republican Party that was intended to benefit them rather than the rich or the corporations. And to the best of my knowledge, nobody, and it was going to, what we were going to give away was one of my books. To the best of my knowledge, nobody ever won that contest. So, Robert, I can't answer your question because, to the best of my knowledge, the whole collective wisdom of our message boards and our listeners and everybody else all these years has not been able to answer it. I don't think that there ever has been.
Wow, that's pretty sad.
Yeah, it really is. Thanks a lot for the call, Robert. I appreciate it. Dee in Wisconsin. Hey, Dee, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Really nice to talk with you.
Thank you.
I love your show. Love the books. Okay,
thanks.
Fandom aside, I have a point to make and then two questions, if I may. The point is, first of all, I heard you reading that ad about the prop plane, and my head wanted to explode, but anyway.
Because I'm giving Beechcraft free advertising, or because it was a funny ad, or because it was,
It's a reprehensible ad. The fact that the way these people look at things is, let's figure out a way to convince or manipulate the public.
You're right. The basic meme of the ad was, here's how you con the politicians.
Yeah.
Yeah,
crazy.
You're right.
Anyway, my comment is along those lines. We teach our kids rhetoric, and I really want to say that. I mean, I don't think there's a parent around or an adult around who's worked with kids or youth that hasn't used the adage of, choice. We all have choices, and choices come with consequences, good and bad. And yet somehow magically when we turn 18 in this country or whatever the assumption is for autonomous thought and decision making is, I'm sure there's arguments about that too, like everything else, we just seem to lose sight of that. I mean, everybody wants to point fingers. The politicians want to point fingers at each other's parties. The Wall Street wants to point fingers at politicians and individuals. Individuals want to point fingers at corrupt government. And it seems to me that we're missing the simplest, and maybe I'm stupid, but the simplest thing is it needs to change from the bottom up. It's how we teach ourselves to be responsible adults who make good choices. I know that's a very simplistic attitude, but I think there's plenty of blame to go around. And until we start looking at how we make our choices and how we elect our officials and all of those things from the bottom up, I don't see that anything will change. It's just more regurgitation of the same.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point, Dee, and the core of it, although be careful. I mean, it's walking near a very, very thin edge. The fact of the matter is that we collectively, we the people, through legislation, through our elected representatives, we establish the rules of the games. And within those rules, people make choices. And very often, the rules narrow the choices to the point where people don't have the choices that they frankly need to be able to have in order to survive. For example, you say, well, you know, you lost your job, you don't have health insurance, you've got cancer, you know, you can't afford to get it fixed, so you're going to die. Well, you shouldn't have made the choice to lose your job, for example. I mean, those are the kind of conservative memes that are out there. You know this.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when we use that language, I think we do it with some risk associated with it.
You mean the language of choice? And
that's right.
I agree, but I'm going back to the notion. Well, there's a talk. I don't know if you're familiar with TED.com or the TED Talks, but there's a guy who isn't terribly eloquent or inspiring in the way he speaks, but his message, I think, is one that every American, frankly, should hear at some point if they so choose, speaking of choice. But his name is Barry Schwartz, and he talks about the loss of our collective simple wisdom. And it's amazing talk. But anyway.
Well, and there's a similar, and Dee, thank you for making the point. There's a similar one that that Robert Wolff, in his book What It Is to Be Human and the variations of it, lays out. Robert Wolff's concept is that there's the tyranny of choice. That, you know, when he lived with the Senoi, the Malaysian indigenous people of Malaysia, there were very few choices in that society. And he felt that that actually made them happier, that there is so much choice in our society, there's such a variety of things to choose from, that we are overwhelmed by it and crushed ultimately by it. So, I think it's an interesting concept. Mark in Hansville, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Just fine. What's on your mind?
Say, the comment, I just heard it a little while ago. I didn't get the whole thing about the whole Senate leadership and the art of war. That was a good comment, but I'm not sure I agree with it. I actually think a big problem is Harry Reid.
Question is it possible that, and I guess we'll find out if there's a big battle and he actually calls their bluff. Steny Hoyer today came out and asked, you know, and said that Harry Reid needs to call the Republicans' bluff and demand a filibuster.
Well, here's a guy who's the head of the Senate right now. I mean, he can't even handle one rogue senator, Lieberman, who went from Democrat to being a Democrat to independent, then went over to the Republicans. I mean, I would think that if he had any sense of power or leadership, he would have been able to keep Lieberman in better control. So based on what I've seen from him in the past, I just can't make the connection between that and him kind of being that together enough to pull off an article.
Well, at the end of the day, he kept Joe Lieberman voting with the Democrats and caucusing with the Democrats, and that I think is a good thing. The problem is Joe Lieberman. It's not Harry Reid.
Yeah, but I mean now he's doing that. But you know when Lieberman was going off and campaigning for McCain.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody took him seriously.
Think we should bring Boxer into this and have
there,
her
there's
challenge.
A certain. But it, you know, isn't there a certain point, Mark, at which politicians, including Joe Lieberman, as detestable as he is as a politician, politically, on most issues. Or, you know, broadly speaking, let's say, at least with regard to the Iraq war, isn't there a point at which you want to say, hey, he's still answerable to his state. He's still, you know, he still gets to say whatever he wants to say. And the people in his state are the ones who have to decide whether they're going to keep him or not, whether they're going to recall him, whether they're going to vote him out of office. It's not Harry Reid's job.
Well, to some degree, yeah. I mean, but, you know, I mean, Harry Reid is the Senate leader, right? But this
he's the Senate majority leader, yeah. That doesn't mean that he's God or that he's king or that he can squash somebody. Although Lyndon Johnson used to be pretty good at grabbing people by the shirt collar and slamming them up against the wall, as he famously did to the chief, the chairman of the Federal Reserve back when LBJ was president. I'll give Harry a pass on Joe Lieberman. But the filibuster, I'm not sure yet.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
I was driving my rig down the interstate. Had an on-time bonus, couldn't afford to be late. So to save on fuel, save time and cash, I fly by the scale house, move on past with PrePass.
PrePass.
It's a bypass system, first of its kind. Checks my weight and my dock's driving 65. Then a green light flashes up on my dash. And while the other eight stop, I just move on past with PrePass.
PrePass.
With your good driving record, PrePass can save you time and money on every haul. Highway sensors check your weight and certifications as you drive highway speed. If everything checks, a green light on your dash says drive on by. Try PrePass free. We guarantee you'll want it along on every haul. Visit PrePass.com or call 888-559-PASS to try PrePass free. That's PrePass.com or 888-559-PASS. 888-559-PASS.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evenings 8 to 11, AM 620 KPOJ, 620KPOJ.com.
Dear Mom and Dad, well, the Army has finally seen fit to give me some time off, so I'm writing to tell you that I'm doing fine over here. And Mom, since you asked, if anyone wants to help, just tell them to contact the USO. You can't believe how much they do for us. With love, your son Michael.
The USO depends on the generosity of the American people. To find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. Al museo está al lado del parque. El museo está.
When you realize you're actually speaking in another language, you won't be able to stop. Experience the joy for yourself with a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. Call 1-800-509-9122. Developed around the way you naturally think and learn, Rosetta Stone guarantees that this proven program is the fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, the same way you learned your first language. And now you can get a free demo as our gift to you. With no translation, no boring drills, and no useless memorization, there's no way you won't enjoy learning a new language.
El museo está al lado del parque.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-509-9122. 1-800-509-9122. For your free demo, call 1-800-509-9122.
Hello, I'm John Hodgman, author of The Areas of My Expertise. Today I'm here to tell you about the unknown history of Powell's Books. The store was born during the written word revolution of 1895, fought beneath what is now the Willamette River. The bloody grammatical fuss claimed more than 250,000 lives, many of them fish. Then came the 1927 book massacre, when thousands of pulp novels suffered irrevocable dog ears and egregious coffee stains. But I see I'm out of time. Support Powell's, an independent bookseller with a long, colorful history. And buy my book, The Areas of My Expertise. That is all.
There is a wonderful product on the market called the CZ Infrared Heater. It's a portable heater that gives you the heating power of a furnace. The heater has saved us a lot of money on our energy bills. Best of all, it's healthy. It uses the most therapeutic infrared heat available. CZ Infrared Heater. It's good for you, good for the environment. The best heater that ever saved you money.
Order your CZ Infrared Heater now. Call 1-800-707-2041 or visit radio.czinfrared.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Well, it began in late 2007 as a routine audit.
I hate Walmart. If you didn't hear the story, well, here's how it is. Big company sell the low cost, drive mom and pop out of business. Pretty soon all over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart.
Well, Well, it's not just that. It's that in 2007, they noticed some of their exit signs, these glow-in-the-dark exit signs, were missing. So they did an audit across the country and discovered that 15,800 of them are missing. What's the big deal? Radiation. The signs contain tritium gas. Yes. The stuff used to make nuclear bombs. It's what makes the glow-in-the-dark emergency exit signs glow-in-the-dark. It can be used to make nuclear warheads. It can be used to make dirty bombs. And in Canada, it's not even tracked. They don't even track this stuff. And now the U.S. government is starting to say, hey, wait a minute, what happened? 15,800 of these signs containing tritium are missing from Walmarts all across the United States, about 20% of their entire inventory. Very strange. Very, very strange. Bill in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind?
Hey. I've been reading a lot about the fair tax. And in fact, if you go online and read about, you know, fairtax.org, it sounds to me, isn't that what we want to do to get out of this mess that we're in now? Wouldn't that help us?
No, I mean, fair tax. The so-called fair tax.
Obama said?
Bill, nice, you know, nice try, nice plug, and you know, I don't know what they're paying you there to get their URL out, but it's the fair tax is not fair. I'm sorry. What we need to do is go back to a progressive income tax where the top right. It's very simple. Roll back the Reagan tax cuts. It's one soundbite. Just roll back the Reagan tax cuts. We had a good, strong economy for 40 years in this country, and Ronald Reagan destroyed it by creating bubble economies. And you know, a whole variety of writers, including good Republicans, have pointed this out. We need to roll back the Reagan tax cuts. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Tom, I think I get your point. You're basically saying that we should be taxing this money rather than borrowing it. Is that right?
Exactly. If we're going to spend money, we ought to be – instead of borrowing the money from our children and grandchildren and from China, by the way, in their names, we should be raising the money domestically. And the way that you raise money is called taxes and when
right.
Government does it. Yeah, it's real simple.
And no, I understand the new president.
That's why we didn't have deficits or, you know, significant deficits before Reagan. The U.S. debt, if you look at the U.S. debt over a 230-year period, it looks like the carbon dioxide, hockey stick. You know, it's this kind of nice, long, flat line that kind of has a little pimple during the Civil War, a little pimple during the World War I, and a little bigger pimple during World War II, and then it just, whoa, goes right off the screen.
Yep. So in that vein, Tom, it would seem like, you know, what would help would be higher taxes, higher rates of unionization. And along that line, I'm a little disappointed with Timothy Geithner's pick to be the car czar, or at least on the new car czar board, this Ron Blum. It sounds like he was one of the kind of Clinton era so-called labor types who really helped to sell labor down the river. It just perplexes me that we're not, well, obviously, I mean, President Obama is not a leftist, obviously, but at the same time, it seems like this would even benefit the system to have stronger labor unions, higher taxes, and if capital threatens to move offshore, then we just increase regulation on the capital. It seems pretty straightforward.
Yes, and I agree. And when the Clinton administration was in power, they were dancing to the tune of Bill Clinton, the people who were working for him. And now Barack Obama is in power, and if he brings back the same people because they have the experience of how Washington, D.C. works, and he doesn't want to have to bring people in and go through what was a fairly brutal learning curve for the Clinton administration because they didn't want to have any Carter people involved, which I think was a mistake. So they made a lot of mistakes. I mean, Clinton made a terrible number of mistakes early on. So if he brings in some of these folks simply because they've been through the learning curve and says, you're going to do it my way, and they agree, then we don't have a problem. If, on the other hand, he brings in Clinton people who are still Clinton ideologues and who still think that the Telecommunications Act of 96 and the WTO and NAFTA and, you know, all these other things were just fine, thank you very much, and, you know, encouraging companies to offshore products and passing tax. And I realize most of this was done by Republican legislators or Republican, you know, House and Senate, Republican legislature. But still, Clinton went along with most of these things enthusiastically.
Tom,
then we've got a problem. So let's wait and see how these guys behave.
Tom, how much of this do you think is what Professor Noam Chomsky talked about, how the currency speculators are actually holding democratic governments hostage now? Because if we do something like what we need to do, raise taxes, increase regulation, these currency speculators just start dumping dollars. Do you think that's playing a part in this?
I think it may well. And the question in my mind, and I frankly don't know the answer, and I'm not sure anybody does, is to what extent is it independent currency speculators, you know, like some of your various billionaires out there, or versus the government of China, the government of Japan. We know that these countries are maintaining their currencies by buying and selling their own currencies and other currencies. They maintain the values of their currencies. To what extent is that messing with us? The whole system has become so complex. This whole idea of globalization. On Bloomberg last night, the Bloomberg out of Hong Kong, I watch that every evening. And just, you know, fascinating, this conversation that he's having with this guy about how interconnected it all is. And as if, like, well, this is just the way it is. We're not going to get around this. I mean, and people say, well, you know, the Great Depression, Smoot-Hawley crashed the Great Depression. International trade was only 4% of our GDP. At the peak, you know, 4.1% in 1929, at the peak of that, and I frankly don't know what the number is right now, and I'm not sure that anybody does, because the real international trade numbers are obscured by the intra-company international trade numbers. About half of all the trade done in and out of the United States is not actually trade between countries or between companies. It's within companies. It's Hewlett-Packard setting up a factory. Instead of building the factory in Madison, Wisconsin, they build it in Jingdao, China, and manufacture it, and sell to themselves, and they call that international trade. And it's not international trade. It's simply arbitrage of labor. And so, but in any case, it looks like, you know, it's probably 10, 12, 14%, something like that of U.S. GDP. It's getting really, really significant. But it's impossible to track. I mean, you know it's huge when you can't find anything made in the USA in most stores. But, you know, what are we going to do about it? I think we need to go back to a tariff-based system, period.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So I get this note in the mail, well, actually in the email, from Mark. He was listening to George Norrie's show, Coast to Coast, and Jerome Corsi and Alex Jones, who have both been guests on this show, and a number of members of Congress, according to this email, and I'm not giving it credibility or not. I'm just saying this is what a listener is reporting. It says, here's what I understand is being established, that the statement was put together by these guys. The United States of America has been completely corrupted. Welcome back to our second hour, by the way. By foreign banks and international organizations, the United States no longer represents the heritage and ancestry of the Anglo-Saxon founders. And federal politicians have sold out to special interest groups like Jewish bankers and Muslim extremists. Non-democratic globalists are stealthily moving ahead with a plan for a world government. And they're calling for armed insurrection, secession, tax revolts, all these kinds of things. And especially, as John Gibson famously said on Fox News, for white people to have more babies. Into this steps Paul Cameron, Dr. Paul Cameron, chairman of the Family Research Institute, familyresearchinst.org and ejssb.org, with an op-ed, Democrats are wrong, we need to have more kids, suggesting that we are facing a crisis because we are not reproducing at huge numbers. Dr. Paul Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I don't get it. First of all, the United States population is growing. We're growing by about 150,000 people every single month, in part from immigration, in part from simply population growth, although it is a fact that most of the people having babies in the United States now are not, you know, European Caucasian ancestry. They tend more often to be African Americans or, in particular, Latinos. A lot of Catholics there and, you know, a lot of history of large families. Is that your concern?
No, there's a fundamental injustice going on, and that is if you could get married and have kids and you don't, you are ripping off your neighbor. You're ripping off society. And our society has bought into the notion that whatever you want to do is what we as a social system are to endorse.
Well, last time we had you on, you were going off about homosexuality. Is this a variation on that? Because it seems to me that if people are having, you know, here we've got this woman who just had what she's got now 16 or 18 babies or something like that. I mean, isn't there something wrong with that? Isn't there? I mean, this we have this planet, we're pushing 7 billion people, and the only reason the 7 billion people, 6 billion and change, can survive on this planet right now is because of fossil fuels. If you were to take away fossil fuels, and we will one day, you would not be able to feed more than a half a billion to a billion people.
Well, aside from that, we might disagree about some particulars there, but
well, you can't aside from that.
Well, let's go and look at the West as a whole, from Australia all the way through Europe. And with the exception of the United States, which, as you pointed out, is now producing 2.1 children per woman, so we're okay, we're stable, the rest of the West is slowly, and in some countries, rapidly collapsing. Think of Japan. Think of Italy. Think of Spain.
Their population is being reduced. But actually, most of those countries, with the exception of Japan, Japan has very, very strict immigration policy, and so their population is actually contracting. But the rest of those countries, their population is increasing from immigration.
They're not. It varies. But, for instance, in Italy, let's take that as an example, their collapse, their not having enough children, is resulting in their adversely affecting Moldova and other poor countries. Those countries are being asked to send, usually women, to care for the old, because Italy doesn't produce enough children to care for the old. Now, they have great wealth compared to the great mass of the world, and so for a while, they're going to be able to hire it out. But some of those hires are Muslim, some of those are from other political faiths, so to speak, and Italy, in fact, all of Europe is imperiled by the emigration that they now quite obviously
need. Well, I think using Italy as an example is wonderful, and I'm really glad you did, because Italy is where the Renaissance started in the 14th century. And
yep.
And as I'm sure you know, if you've bothered to read it, the 14th century, what brought about the Renaissance was first the medieval warming period ended, which caused food to crash, and there had been a huge population boom in the 10th through the 12th centuries. And so the Little Ice Age began, and there was less food, and so they started having famines. The Hanseatic League was in a crisis as a consequence of this. The Hundred-Year War between England and France was going on. And then the Black Death broke out, and a third of the population died. And the result of a third of the population dying from the plague and another 10 or 12% of the population dying from wars and from famine was that as the population was reduced, the cost of labor went up. And that produced the first strong middle class in European history, and that produced the Renaissance. Reducing the population of Italy by a third in less than 50 years was the best thing that ever happened to that country, or for that matter, arguably, to the world.
You can make that argument. And
I just did.
Okay, that's fine. But now we're talking about our land and our time.
Right, and I would submit to you that if we were to say in the United States we're going to go and you know magically snap a finger and every family's only going to have one baby, and within two or three generations the population of this country is going to get back down to where it was. Well, actually, it would take a while. Back down to where it was when JFK was inaugurated, was sworn in as president, and in, instead of 325 million people, we had what, around 240 million people.
Right.
That it would actually improve our standard of living. We'd have fewer people competing for the same amount of resources. The cost of labor would be higher. The middle class would be stronger.
Yeah, but people create resources. Like, for instance, when JFK talked, essentially we had no computers. We had those big boxes in giant buildings, but people in general didn't have them.
Yeah, but numbers of people is not the thing. I mean, the fact of the matter is that no matter how many geniuses are born in the slums of Bombay, none of them are ever going to change the world Einstein did or Thomas Edison did, because they don't have access to the resources to exercise their genius. Simply having babies isn't the solution.
Well, right now we have a problem, and we need babies, and we need those babies in marriage.
What for?
What do we need
these babies for?
We need babies because, for the West as a whole, as Italy is collapsing demographically, it's affecting adversely neighboring countries. They are also being demographically hurt. And look at our
connection. How are they being demographically hurt by having opportunities to go to Italy and you know make money?
All right. In Moldova, where I've just come from, the females there, girls of marriageable age, many women who are married can make more money in Italy tending to the old. They go. It's very, very hard for them to actually have a life. They can come back usually once or twice a year. Their marriage is dissolved. They don't have kids when they're in Italy. They don't get seduced by the old people with whom they work. Maybe a doctor here and there or whatever. And so the population of Moldova is also being tremendously adversely impacted.
So is what you're saying
Italy.
This has always been the case all over the world, that rich countries draw labor pools from poor countries, regardless of whether their population is expanding or collapsing. I mean, that's always been the case. Right now, there was the big crisis about the Polish plumber in the UK when the EU said you can't keep people out if they want to work in your country, and the UK joined the EU, and people were running all these ads about, because Poland was a poorer country, and so the plumbers would go to work in the UK. What does that have to do with having babies?
An enormous
And are you not advocating that we only have white babies? Is that what you're suggesting?
No. I'm suggesting that we want to change our tax code and the way we honor people more in accord with a Roman standard that no one should be allowed to inherit property unless they got married and had children. That's a very sensible policy. I don't think we can implement that, but we could implement incentives.
We have 6 billion people on this planet, Paul Cameron. We 6 billion people. We are using more than half of the total planet's photosynthetic output. We're wiping out other species because of our presence. And you want more babies?
Absolutely. People are our most valuable resource in developing.
What are you talking about, Soylent Green?
Pardon me?
Are you suggesting we should be eating people? I mean, Soylent Green, I would say the intellectual capacity of people is an important resource, but we don't, well, we're out of time. Paul Cameron, people can read your riff on this over at familyresearchinst.org or EJSSB.org. Dr. Paul Cameron, thanks for dropping by today, sir.
All right. But we need more people, not fewer.
More people. Okay. Have more babies. Yes. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, this is Rachel Maddow. I'm a firm believer that age is just a number, but a little push in the right direction is always a bonus. That's why I had to find out more about this product called Night Skin. I spoke to some representatives from Night Skin, and I was taken aback by two things in particular. First, Night Skin was formulated by Dr. Arthur Perry. He's an award-winning plastic surgeon who's trained at Harvard and Cornell. Secondly, I was taken aback by how passionate the representatives were about Nightskin. It's clear that they stood behind this revolutionary product, and for good reason. Nightskin reduces fine lines and wrinkles and even dark spots that come with age. It has the most effective ingredients in the right doses that safely and effectively help to turn back the clock. Proven ingredients like retinol, glycolic acid, and vitamin C. You apply a little on your face before bed, and you're done. Nightskin's convenient, affordable, it easily accommodates anyone's lifestyle. Best of all, it's risk-free today. You can call to order your Nightskin by dialing 1-800-491-8335. Call 1-800-491-8335. That number again is 1-800-491-8335.
AM 620 KPOJ conducts various contests weekdays and weekends at various times, offering various prizes to its listeners. By participating in a KPOJ contest, you're agreeing to be bound by the official contest rules for the contest. No purchase necessary. Participants and winners must be U.S. residents, at least 18 years old, and may only enter one time unless otherwise stated in the complete official contest rules. Only one prize per household for any contest within a 30-day period. For complete contest rules, visit the main office of this station during regular business hours.
When I first wanted LASIK, I was told I didn't qualify because I had astigmatism. It's a good thing I called 2020 Institute for a second opinion.
When I asked my eye doctor about LASIK, she told me I didn't qualify because I had dry eyes. I'm sure glad I went to 2020 Institute for a second opinion.
At 2020 Institute, we have the latest technology that can now make LASIK a reality for many who didn't qualify in the past. LASIK at 2020 Institute has never been safer or more precise. And for a limited time only, save $1,000 off worry-free LASIK during our 2020 Institute anniversary event. With zero down and 0% interest for 2 years, LASIK has never been more affordable. If you have questions or have been told that you're not a candidate for LASIK, call 2020 Institute to find out how the latest advancements in LASIK may be your solution to lens-free living. Call 2020 Institute at 503-771-2020. That's 503-771-2020 or visit us at 2020institute.com.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury Parts and Service presents A Word from Your Car Radio.
You're listening to KFORD, where it's all car, all the time. And that last little number was called, Isn't It Time for Scheduled Maintenance from Your Dealer?
Yeah, but I just want to listen to music, car radio.
Well, here's a little ditty. No one knows my Ford like you do, Ford Dealer.
That's a real song?
Maybe you'll remember this chart topper. Get your paws off my Ford, non-Ford trained technician.
Okay, car radio, I get the hint. For service, I'll go to my Ford dealer.
Get the Works Fuel Saver Package. A Motorcraft synthetic blend oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection, fluid top-off, and more. Just $29.95 or less after $10 mail-in rebate.
Boy, I'm glad you talked me into going to my Ford dealer, car radio.
Well, like the song says, never change your oil anywhere else and never change the station.
Ooh, catchy.
Check out other money-saving rebates on name-brand tires, batteries, and maintenance packages at GenuineService.com. Taxes, diesel, and disposal fee extra. See participating dealership for rebate details through 331-09.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Today, kids who can understand anything they say, kids, they are disobedient, disrespectful oafs, noisy, crazy, sloppy, lazy, loafers. And while we're on the subject, kids, you can talk and talk till your face is blue. Kids, but they still do just what they want to do. Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today?
Yeah, and Paul Cameron, he's saying, you know, have more babies. As I recall, this was a topic on Fox News a couple of years ago. John Gibson, in fact.
Now it's time for my word. Do your duty. Make more babies. That's the lesson drawn out of two interesting stories over the last couple of days. First, the story yesterday that half of the kids in this country under 5 years old are minorities.
By oh,
far,
no.
The greatest number are Hispanic. You know what that means? 25 years, and the majority population is Hispanic.
Oh,
why
no.
Is that? Well, Hispanics are having more kids, and others, notably the ones Hispanics called gabachos, white people, are having fewer.
Oh, this is a disaster, says Gibson.
Put it bluntly, we need more babies.
More white babies.
Forget about that zero population growth stuff that my poor generation was misled on. Why is this important? Because civilizations need population to survive.
Mm.
So far, we're doing our part here in America, but Hispanics can't carry the whole load. The rest of you get busy. Make babies. Or put another way, a slogan for our times, procreation, not recreation. That's my word.
That's John Gibson's word. Yeah, right. Stephen Kotler is with us. He is the author of two books, the 1999 novel, The Angle Quickest for Flight, which was a San Francisco Chronicle bestseller, and also the nonfiction work West of Jesus, Surfing Science and the Origins of Belief. And Stephen Kotler, KOTLER.com. His website's STEVEN, Stephen. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You are, our last guest was suggesting that we needed to have more babies in the world, particularly, I think implicitly, he didn't explicitly say it, but I think he was essentially saying the same thing John Gibson was saying, more white babies. You're suggesting a five-year ban on having babies, period, because a billion fewer people is a great place to start. Give me your riff, Stephen.
I am suggesting that. Those numbers are actually misleading. The other number that scares them, by the way, is that by 2042, the majority of non-Christians will outnumber Christians in America. And that's, you know, that goes along with the coded racist message of we need more white people, which is, you know, also the message they've been spreading around Europe as of late.
Yep.
The global population is 6.7 million people or billion. People.
Yeah.
By 2050, according to even the most conservative numbers, that goes up to 9.2 billion people. We've spent a great deal, scientists have spent a great deal of time in recent years trying to figure out what is the so-called carrying capacity of the Earth. Mm-hmm. That term refers to how many people can live here sustainably. And there are a lot of different numbers that have been floated about, but the standard projection for a sustainable planet in human population is 2 billion people. And if we insist on living with American standards of living, that number drops as far down as 200 million. That is a far cry from where we're at today, let alone where we're going to be tomorrow. So,
and just, you know, for historical context, 200 million is what the population of the world was around the time of Jesus, around 2,000 years ago. And it didn't hit a half a billion until about 1,000 years ago during the time of the Crusades. And I don't think anybody would say the world was, you know, dramatically and terribly underpopulated at that time. And then the population of the world went to, you know, we hit our first billion people in 1930. In 1800. Our second billion in 1930. Our third billion when JFK was inaugurated in 1960. So it's not like...
And we're going to double it in 100 years from 1960
JFK. But my point is that if we, you know, if half of all the people on Earth were to vanish tomorrow, we would still be as heavily populated as we were when JFK was president, and there was concern that we were well over the carrying capacity of the planet then.
Absolutely. Dr. Martin Luther King in 1966 said there is no human circumstance more tragic than the persisting existence of a harmful condition for a remedy is readily available, and he was talking about population control in 1966.
Yeah. And at that time, the population of the planet had just passed the 3 billion point. And we're now, you know, it took 160,000 years to get the first billion in 1800. It took 130 years to get the second billion in 1930. It only took 30 years to get the third billion in 1960. It only took 14 years to get the fourth billion in 1974. It only took 13 years to get the next billion in 87. And only 11 years to get the last billion in 99. And what's it going to take for the next billion? Another 10 years? I mean, this is crazy.
And what a lot of people, you know, there's been a lot of research done that, you know, two-thirds of this country, America I'm talking about, is currently, you know, gravely concerned about the environment, and for all the obvious reasons. Less than a third of the people who live here actually understand that having less children actually significantly affects the environment for the better.
Right.
It sounds like the simplest thing in the world to people who are in the environmental movement or are familiar with the issues, but it's a huge gap. I mean, there are reasons for it. for this gap in knowledge, but it's still a huge gap in knowledge that needs to be corrected.
Well, and it also affects the standard of living. As Malthus pointed out, as population goes down, the price of labor goes up. As population goes up, the price of labor goes down. And if population goes up fast enough, the price of labor goes down fast enough, you got no middle class at all. You've got a disaster. Stephen Kotler, Stephen, STEVENKOTLER.com, his website. Stephen, thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Good talking with you. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Yeah, teach your children well. Not quite like our crazy alert for the day.
Maybe
Bristol Palin. And, you know, God bless her. I mean, she's a kid. I would not be doing this if she had not decided to go out and sit and talk with the media and do an in-public interview. And here is a clip from it.
I don't want to pry too personally, but, I mean, obviously contraception is an issue here. Is that something that you would just... lazy about or not interested, or do you have a philosophical or religious opposition to it? Or
no, I don't want to get into detail about that, but I think abstinence is like the, I don't know how to put it, like the main, everyone should be abstinent or whatever, but it's not realistic.
Yeah, it's not realistic. Sorry, just not realistic at all. So you figure it out a little after the fact. We need to be teaching our children well. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Bill in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hey, not much, Tom. Listen, we share the ideological root of liberalism, but over the last 2.5 years, I've gone from agreeing with you 90% of the time to only about 10, moving from the self-proclaimed democratic socialist to now a anarcho-capitalist, but maybe I'll end up someday somewhere in the middle. Anyway, I called to make a couple points. First of all, I've done a lot of reading on JSTOR, which is an archive, and Hoover was not a free marketer. I don't know why you peddle that, but he was nothing close to a free marketer.
No, Bill, I have not peddled that. In fact, the point that I've made on this show a couple of times is that I find it incredibly ironic that the position that I'm taking on this show is the position that was the Republican position up through the middle of the 1930s, and arguably was the Republican position up until the 1960s, which was one of protectionism. And it's one of the reasons why Pat Buchanan and I agree on these things. So, I'd say do your homework a little better. Bill in Blaine, Washington. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Oh, it's David.
Oh, I'm sorry. David. Yeah.
Oh, no problem. Hey, I wanted to just – you mentioned the 2012 date and how some people think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, but in fact, that's our contest today over at TomHartman.com is for a copy of my book, We the People. Is, you know, how do you think – do you think the world's going to end in 2012, and if so, how?
No, it's based on my limited understanding of the Mayan calendars, which I've been studying off and on since 1993, that they're galactic in origin. And the winter solstice 2012, according to various teachings, represents galactic alignment in that our solar system lines up with the galactic center every 13,000 years. And so the astronomers have done the math, and so we're scheduled to be, perpendicular with the galactic center, which to some Native American tribes represents a new golden age, whatever that means.
Yeah, I have heard that as well. David, thank you very much. In fact, Daniel Pinchbeck is going to be with us at the top of the hour to talk about that. That very topic, our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. Kurt in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Kurt, what's up?
Well, I just want to comment. You asked a question earlier about whether we're seeing the art of war here.
Oh, with Harry Reid, yeah.
You know, yeah, and well, getting back more to the Obama point, yeah, he's playing the, hand out, let's work together stuff. As he said in his campaign, I can only do so much as president. You want to move things along, you have to do it from the ground up.
Yeah,
and one of the things that nobody's talking about, is actually organizing and how we're going to get it done.
Yeah.
The mechanisms exist out there. They definitely exist, but the people that are involved in those mechanisms, it's more like talking around the water cooler, and they're not even talking about organizing, and that's what we need to be doing.
I agree, and that's why things like Drinking Liberally and the Democracy for America and, there's just a whole variety of groups out there, Progressive Democrats of America, PDAmerica.org, there's a lot of groups that, and Ben Cohen's got a great group, TrueMajority.org. There are a lot of great groups out there that are in place. And, and obviously the online ones, that are reaching out to people that are available. And the Democratic Party, of course, is another good one. And I think, frankly, we need to be making more use of those groups. I would like to see much broader use of those. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Jim in Burbank, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Jim.
Hey. I think the idea, the whole our discussion about global carrying capacity is just a boogeyman argument that scares people. Sort of like that peak oil argument, because in my opinion, it's so dynamic. It's not a line in the sand that we have to be afraid of, because it's more like just a sand drift. If people get together and work together, there's more carrying capacity. If people launch bombs, there's no carrying capacity. So, how can anybody take
That doesn't make any sense to me, Jim.
It doesn't?
Right at this moment, we are despoiling our nest. We're ruining the planet upon which we live.
I agree.
For ourselves. And the major contributor to that ruination is the roughly trillion pounds of human flesh on this planet. I mean, we've got to do something about that.
I agree, but by talking about something that is so hard to pin down, such as carrying capacity, it does not address the issue that I think should be in terms of what we can actually organize around.
The carrying capacity is how many people can this planet accommodate and accommodate all other forms of life.
Uh-huh. And it all changes.
Certainly it changes as
so
technology changes
down.
Over time. Yeah, and if we get off fossil fuels and if we can get more efficient and we can figure out to have produce far less waste, then the carrying capacity of the planet will increase.
If we can stop wars, yes.
Maybe. War, you could argue, in many ways is environmentally destructive, but I'm not sure what it has to do with necessarily carrying capacity. Other than, population
really?
Density.
I don't understand what you're saying then. You're not making any sense, because when wars kill so many people, and when the example of war keeps people disrespecting themselves and each other, then we don't cooperate and we cannot maintain any legitimate civilized carrying capacity on this planet.
My point was that war, as we play war, genocidal war where you kill all the other people, where you kill civilians on the other side, that kind of war is a symptom of having exceeded the carrying capacity of your particular area. That, for example, you go back and read some of Jefferson's notes and read some of the early observers of the Native American tribes. They were astounded. I think it was the Penobscots No, it's the Pequots. They were astounded by the fact that we would engage in a war where the goal of the war was to kill as many as of the other people as possible. The idea of genocidal war was virtually unknown to them. I mean, there were tribes like the Shoshone who didn't even have that word in the vocabulary because they had established homeostasis. It was to have a child more than every 7 years among the Iroquois Confederacy was considered weird. They looked at us, having 10, 12 children and said, there's something wrong. They're treating their women like cattle.
But you just said the words that are ridiculous. Wars are start when the carrying capacity is exceeded.
I would say that war is a cultural mental illness that in part is caused by excessive population. Yeah.
As defined by the people who wish to get more. Okay, the people in control and in power of all.
No,
these
because
other
when you look at cultures groups that don't have wars, they have stable populations. Jim, I would really strongly suggest you pick up a copy of Peter Farb's book, Man's Rise to Civilization. Peter Farb is one of the best anthropologists this country's ever had. He's dead now. You have to buy a used copy of it, but they're certainly out there. Man's Rise to Civilization by Peter Farb. And read about cultures that don't have war. And read about cultures that are homeostatic, that are not exploding. Ralph in Northampton, Mass. Hey, Ralph, got a minute before the break. What's up?
Okay, there was a op-ed piece in last Friday's Times by Reed Hastings, CEO of Netflix, please raise my taxes.
Right.
And I think that's important. The other thing was food made in America. How do you know? I've got a can of Spam here. Nowhere on it does it say it was made in this country.
Yeah, does it say in very small type on the bottom, Soylent Green ink?
Packed here.
Packed here. Well, see, and that's one of the things. I got an email from somebody earlier today, I think it was, saying, you complain about American manufacturing going away, but here's a list of all the manufacturers, and they're listing all these companies, and most of these companies aren't actually manufacturing in the United States. They're assembling in the United States. Computer companies, even car companies. I mean, they're manufacturing many of their airplane parts are being manufactured overseas. Right across even much of our military that we brag about, we have this huge military-industrial complex. An awful lot of that stuff is made overseas as well. We assemble some of it here, and then we say, made in the USA? No.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
A big name in anti-aging right now is Dr. Arthur Perry. He's been all over TV, he's heard on the radio, he has a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue. Here's the twist. Dr. Perry is a plastic surgeon, but he likes to have his patients try a cream called Night Skin before they go schedule their surgical procedures. Night Skin goes on while you sleep. It supports natural collagen and elastin production. So when you use Night Skin, it reduces the appearance of your fine lines. It makes your skin smoother. It even fades away those unwanted brown spots that come with age. Dr. Perry says many of his patients call off their surgery appointments after using Night Skin because they're that happy with the results they see in the mirror. Now, Dr. Perry's Night Skin is available for anyone to get risk-free. Dial 1-800-491-8335. That's 1-800-491-8335. Call right away for your risk-free trial of Night Skin, the anti-aging cream. Dial 1-800-491-8335. That's 1-800-491-8335.
The most progressive 3 hours of local radio you'll hear all day.
Elliott's Hardware has appealed to former President George W. Bush to spend his newfound retirement working as a part-time greeter.
We guarantee it.
Carl Wilson and friends.
Can you tell me where the rakes are?
Weekday 6 to 9.
I'm disappointed. There are no rakes. It's not an error that the store has no rakes, but we are disappointed.
Carl Wilson and friends. Weekday 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ.
What if I said you could erase your wrinkles, tighten your skin, and make frown lines disappear from view, all without surgery or injections? With all the creams you've tried, you're probably skeptical. So I'm going to prove it to you by sending you a free trial of a scientific breakthrough called Hydroxytone. Shed years from your appearance faster than you ever thought possible.
I looked at her and I was just, wow, she looked so young.
I told her I couldn't believe how smooth her face looks.
She's lost, what, 10 years at least?
Request your risk-free trial of this proven breakthrough today. The results are so impressive. Hydroxytone was given away in VIP gift bags at international film festivals.
She always looked good to me, but now I can't believe how young she looks.
Call now for your free trial of hydroxytone. For a limited time, try it before you buy it. 1-800-900-4211. But hurry. When this offer's gone, it's gone. Call 1-800-900-4211. 1-800-900-4211.
President Obama recently said of the economy, failure to act will only deepen this crisis. Folks, the same applies for your personal investments. Isn't it time to stop the bleeding? Equity Index Universal Life isn't for everyone, but for many of us, it's the ideal place to secure your money. Realizing the gains of a strong market with a guarantee that protects you from taking a loss in a down market. This is Blake Kingsley. Find out if Equity Index Universal Life is right for you. Call me at 503-686-8423. 686-8423.
Is there something going on beneath the floors of your home? Water, shifting soils, inadequate support structures, cracks in drywall. The professionals at Terra Firma Foundation Systems have the answer. Ask anyone from the growing list of satisfied friends and neighbors who have chosen Terra Firma to perform the work on their home. You'll find that the Terra Firma professionals show up on time, do the work they are contracted to do, and stand behind their work with the best warranty in the industry. If you have any concern about what might be going on beneath the floor of your home, call Terra Firma Foundation Systems today, 452-4049.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
Listen to Tom Hartman and the Progressive Pop Quiz all this week for your chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to enjoy OMSI's presentation of Da Vinci, the Genius, featuring Secrets of the Mona Lisa. This incredible exhibit demonstrates the full scope of his remarkable genius. Da Vinci, the Genius, has been seen in major cities around the world and is considered the most complete and comprehensive traveling exhibit on Da Vinci ever created.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station. Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
There's no end to what I do. Just because you ask me to. Let the world call me a fool. But if things are right with me and you, that's all that matters, and I'll do anything you ask.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars. In just a moment, Victoria Jones is going to drop by. I want to get Steve in Chicago in here real quick. Steve, you've been holding for a bit. Quick point.
I had a couple tax questions. One is what you might think of Al Gore's proposal to do a tax shift away from income taxes.
To a carbon tax. I think it's a great idea.
And the second thing is that I appreciate what you're saying about reducing taxes on the middle class and raising taxes back to Reagan's rates. If you look at the economic pressure the middle class is under from things like free trade with countries that pay employees $1 an hour, mm-hmm. To, you know, an uncontrollable immigration from Mexico, it's all pressure on the middle class, driving down, you know, wages. You know, all the more reason to rebalance our taxes, just like you're talking about.
Yeah, I agree. I would not entirely replace the income tax with a carbon tax because at a certain point, a lot of income is not consumed, and so it wouldn't be captured. Right. It would be. It's basically a fancy sales tax. But I think having a carbon tax, particularly a corporate carbon tax, is a really good idea. Steve, thank you very much for the call. By the way, recovery.gov is up and running. You want to see where your dollars are going, go to recovery.gov. Victoria Jones on the line with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria, what's happening in Washington, D.C. and around the world today?
Well, hey, Tom. The president's out and about today. He is in Denver, Colorado to sign the stimulus package, taking it on the road. That way he doesn't have to be surrounded by politicians. Well, at least not Washington politicians, which would highlight the fact that he only got three Republican signatories to the bill. And then he heads to Arizona, where he'll talk about home foreclosures, and will unveil a package on that tomorrow. Meantime, interestingly, CBS reporting that the Obama White House is not challenging whether a valid claim of executive privilege can keep former presidential advisor Karl Rove from testifying in the matter of the U.S. attorney firings during the Bush administration. In a statement provided to CBS News, White House counsel Greg Craig says that Obama is very sympathetic to those who want to find out what happened, but at the same time he makes it clear that Mr. Obama, quote, is also mindful as president of the United States not to do anything that would undermine or weaken the institution of the presidency.
Wait a minute. So Obama may support Karl Rove in asserting executive privilege to not testify before John Conyers Committee?
This seems to be what CBS is reporting. According to this statement by Greg Craig, he says he's also mindful as president of the United States not to do anything that would undermine or weaken the institution of the presidency.
Even when the institution of the presidency becomes a criminal enterprise? I mean, somebody needs to tell him what happened in Watergate. He was probably 10 years old at the time, but...
This seems to be the line that they're taking. This is what CBS News is reporting.
Wow. Wow. I'm astounded. We'll see how it plays out. That's a shocker. That's a shocker.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a shocker. It's huge. Now it could be that there's a slightly different meaning that we can put on this. Does say is very sympathetic to those who want to find out what happened. But they have previously said that they're more interested in looking forward than looking backward, and maybe this is part of that.
Yeah. No. We're talking about a cover up of criminal activity. Corrupting the Justice Department, putting Don Siegelman in jail for a crime that wasn't a crime simply because he was a Democrat, stealing an election from him, frankly. These things are crimes, and they are looking into, Conyers Commission is looking into crimes committed by the Bush administration. And I don't see where executive privilege ever should be used or should be usable as a defense against crimes. It certainly wasn't for Haldeman and Ehrlichman. I mean, as I recall, at least one of them went to jail, didn't they?
Yes. I'm not sure which one it was, but one of them did, yes.
And so, I mean, well, we'll see how this plays out.
It should play out fairly quickly because Rove's under subpoena to testify on February the 23rd. So.
Right.
It should play out fairly quickly. Meanwhile, it looks as though the Department of Homeland Security worked with Maryland State Police in tracking protest plans of Peaceful Washington Area Anti-War Group. It tracked their protest plans and passed the information to the Maryland State Police, which had previously labeled the activists as terrorists in an intelligence file. So this is disturbing to some people who weren't aware that the DHS had worked with the police. We knew that the Maryland State Police had been tracking anti-war groups and other groups that had been labeled as terrorists, but there was no knowledge at that time that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security had worked with them. Apparently they obtained two emails containing plans for upcoming demonstrations in Silver Spring in 2005.
This is another reason why we need to repeal the Patriot Act, in my opinion. I mean, just this whole idea that by simply giving somebody the label of terrorist, you completely change our legal system and you completely change the levels of power that the institutions within our government have is downright scary, particularly when we find that the Bush administration and others, frankly, state governments and whatnot, have used that label of terrorist. I mean, there was that woman who was on an airplane who talked back to a flight attendant about her unruly child. And as a consequence of that, the flight attendant, basically busted her. And this woman was prosecuted as a terrorist. This is now part of her permanent record, that she was prosecuted as a terrorist for talking back to a flight attendant. We're going nuts in this country.
Meanwhile, in overseas news, on the same day that there's a new UN report saying that the number of Afghan civilians killed in armed conflict rose 40% last year, they say that insurgents were responsible for 55% of the deaths, but U.S., NATO, and Afghan forces killed 39%, and of those, 552 deaths were blamed on airstrikes. The AP is saying that close to 3,000 American soldiers who recently arrived in Afghanistan have begun operations in the field and already are seeing combat.
Wow. The war is picking up in Afghanistan. This is terrible news, too. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria, I think.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back with Daniel Pinchback and what's going on in 2012.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from our home studio here at AM 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. Broadcasting all across the planet. Daniel Pinchbeck in the studio with us. The author of Breaking Open the Head, which I blurbed, a great book, a book on the psychedelic experience and life and consciousness. And tonight he's going to be at Powell's, by the way, in downtown Burnside, 7:30 for those of you in Portland. And a new book out, 2012, Toward 2012, Perspectives on the Next Age, an anthology that you've edited. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you here. So, is the world going to end in 2012? Is that what the Mayan long date calendar tells us?
Right. Well, I certainly hope it doesn't end in 2012. I sort of see 2012 as a kind of a meme or helpful sort of cultural signifier to catalyze a necessary shift in global culture and consciousness.
And you know, it's interesting because this morning, literally this morning, today's Financial Times, there's an op-ed. The headline: November 10th, 2012. A dystopian dream, and it's all about Sarah Palin being elected president of the United States, Nicolas Sarkozy divorcing Carla Bruni and marrying Madonna.
Okay, well, whatever. We're certainly
the world changes. Right. I mean, it's out there. We're certainly in
huge trouble right now. I mean, we're looking at a massive species extinction crisis. We're in 30 years, 25% of all mammalian species, maybe all species in general, will be extinct. Climate change is accelerating. We're seeing resource depletion, peak oil, lack of water, and so on. And these things all seem to be creating these negative feedback loops. So my perspective is that unless there's a massive transformation in sort of the underlying paradigm of human society, we're going to have a very difficult time. It'll be like Road Warrior without the fun very, very quickly. Now, my first books, Breaking Open the Head and 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, were very much about indigenous culture, indigenous knowledge systems, shamanism. I explored the plant teacher medicines, the psychedelic substances that are used in cultures like the Bwidi in Gabon, the Sequoia in Ecuador. I had a number of experiences that shifted me out of the secular materialist worldview into accepting this kind of shamanic and psychic mystical kind of paradigm. And that also led me to take seriously the what indigenous cultures have to say about the time that we're in now. Whether you look at the Hopi in Arizona, who are considered to be the first people on this continent, they talk about this being the transition between the fourth world and the fifth world. The Maya talk about December 21st, 2012, the classical Maya in the Yucatan developed a very complex astrological, astronomical system, very complex calendrical system, and it seems to be indicated in what they left behind for us to interpret that December 21st, 2012 is the end of this 5,200-year long count and perhaps this threshold shift into a different form of culture and consciousness.
Right. Do you think we can pull it off?
We better. I think we can. I think there's some really good reasons to think that we can. I mean, I think there's I'm interested in the ideas of Peter Russell, who talks about how if you look at successive revolutions in human culture and consciousness, they happen in successive shorter phases of linear time. So the agricultural age took thousands of years to sort of unfold. The industrial age took hundreds of years. The information or knowledge age took just tens of years. So he proposes that we could have another revolution in culture and consciousness that would be from the information or knowledge age to an age of wisdom. You know, so basically we've created these extraordinary tools, but at this point we're not using them with any particular forethought or intelligence or deeper connection to the environment. And you can especially see this in the collapse of the financial system. We've had for decades all of the top-level geniuses from MIT and Princeton going into hedge funds, creating these complex computer modelings, but they've had no connection to, they're just trying to create artificial profits. They're not thinking about, what's actually healthy and healing for local people, for, local environments and so on. So this is the consequence consequence of a really long negative kind of trajectory. And I think it's great that the financial system has melted down, and I don't think it's going to be salvageable in its present form. So in the toward 2012, we discussed things like local currencies, like alternative social organizing models, the transition town model from England, where you have people creating a permaculture-based social organizing model, getting local communities to address peak oil, climate change, economic dislocation, really not looking anymore for authorities or governments to do it. It really is up to individuals and local communities to re-empower themselves to make transformation happen.
We're talking with Daniel Pinchbeck. His new book, Toward 2012, Perspectives on the Next Age. The website's 2012timeforchange.com and realitysandwich.com. He's going to be at Powell's here in Portland tonight at 7:30 also, so you know, check that out. Daniel, it's always seemed to me that the psychology of the world is going to end is meta to the knowledge of personal mortality, and becomes amplified when there's a sense of cultural mortality, when a culture is reaching a toxic point, is reaching a tipping point, is reaching a threshold, what may be a tragic threshold. Then what emerges out of that are these kinds of things. There was an explosion in the 1880s and 1890s in the United States. Ellen White was probably one of the best known leaders of this, what became the Seventh-day Adventist Church, of people who were literally, I mean, she literally gathered a couple hundred followers up on top of a mountain and, you know, waited for the world to end. And the Mormons starting and all these different things, they were all kind of these millennial end of age, end of world times. Mm-hmm. And you could argue that that was the transitional point for the Industrial Revolution, the beginning of the progressive, you know, revolution, as you know, that there was a transitional time there, particularly in America, that was happening. Much like in England, there was a similar thing happening around the time of the late 1600s, I would say. What's your sense of how this is? You mentioned a variety of cultures around the world who are looking at the same time, and they've been looking at the same time for thousands of years. What are your thoughts on how that convergence happens between ancient cultures looking at the year 2012 or at this point in time and modern people, in many cases totally freaked, in other cases seeming obliviously, just kind of cruising on toward disaster?
Okay, so, well, I mean, I've written two books, Breaking Open the Head, and then I wrote 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, which was a five-year endeavor to kind of understand these prophecies and also place them within the Western knowledge system. So I looked at a lot of philosophers from, like, Carl Jung to Heidegger to Nietzsche to Rudolf Steiner. This new book, Toward 2012, is an anthology of essays from Reality Sandwich, the web magazine. In my last book, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, I looked at this concept of the apocalypse, the end of the worldism, as an archetype. Jung talked about, and Jung's follower Edward Edinger talks about this apocalypse as an archetype in the collective psyche, but it's one that's constellating at this time. It's kind of the way these archetypes work, according to Edinger and Jung, is they appear as these kind of manifestations of the psyche, and they seek to kind of constellate, to kind of enter into our human realm over time. And so, but Edinger felt strongly, and Jung also, that this archetype of the apocalypse was coming into presence in our time. Now, the apocalypse literally means uncovering or revealing. So it's not necessarily destruction. It's a time when everything gets revealed.
Well, it's
and
a transformation.
Everything gets,
I mean,
known.
There was a very similar one happening among Jews in 2000 years ago became what we call Christianity.
Right. But I would also say that my perspective is what the apocalypse or the end of the world that we're now experiencing is the end of a certain ego structure. Mm. You know, that this idea that you can have an ego that's based on, you know, material accumulation, competition, possession, these driving forces that have been indoctrinated into people by a destructive mass media, destructive education system, you know, that's leading to an endpoint for our civilization where we're not going to be able to survive.
And that system is kicking and screaming and fighting and even using death and violence to promote ego-enhancing things like alcohol and television and to destroy ego-reducing. It's a bad phrase, but you get the point. Things like, you know, pot and psilocybin and whatnot to reduce the and for that matter, I mean, in China, look at what they're going after Falun Gong
I mean, in my books, I talk about the psychedelic experience. I don't necessarily advocate psychedelics for everyone, but I do feel that, you know, they were profound contributor to what happened in the 60s. They allowed for a kind of initiation process, and I think there could be another social reconsideration of that experience. Not that you know, they're great for everyone, but they allow people to kind of get a deconditioning from their
ego. Well, I think
ego.
Cultures need shamans, and that's what psychedelics in the 60s did, is they, for some at least small percentage of the people who use them, made, you know, gave them the shamanic experience.
Right, and what I argue is that we've gone through an initiatory process from the 60s till now, and now that stuff is coming back into the culture, but in a much more grounded way, with a much deeper connection to these indigenous cultures.
Right.
So that way it's a profound time. And there's also been a lot more medical research on psychedelic use going on right now. If you look at MAPS.org, people are studying psilocybin for obsessive-compulsive disorder, MDMA for post-traumatic stress disorder with Iraq veterans. I think this stuff could be really part of a transformative new paradigm, hopefully leading into this positive shift in 2012.
That's a very optimistic perspective, and let's hope that it's your vision and not this dystopian thing from today's Financial Times. Daniel Pinchback, his new anthology, Toward 2012, Perspectives on the Next Age. Check out the websites realitysandwich.com and 2012timeforchange.com. Daniel, thanks for dropping by. Good talking with you. Great having you here in the studio. It is 16 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, everything you never wanted to know about coal.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
And now, a word from your dog about PetFoodDirect.com. He says you waste a lot of time and money schlepping. Yes, he said schlepping. To buy him food at the pet store. He says you could buy that same food from PetFoodDirect.com and save 20%. Not to mention the cost of gas, time, and schlepping home those big heavy bags from some store. You'll find 137 brands of pet food, guaranteed to save you time and money. PetFoodDirect.com has filled over 2 million orders in the past 10 years. That's 70 in dog years.
Visit PetFoodDirect.com and choose from 137 brands of pet food delivered right to your door. And today, save 20% on your order. Enter coupon code CAT at checkout. PetFoodDirect.com. Coupon code CAT.
Ed Schultz.
So I end up with a front row seat in the first primetime press conference.
Noon to 3.
Folks, change is in the air. The Huffington Post was able to ask a question last night to the President of the United States. Helen Thomas is back on the lineup. Big Eddie in the front row. And I tell you what, it all goes to show that
the Ed Schultz Show.
This administration is listening outside the mainstream media.
Noon to 3.
I have earned that seat, and it's probably going to happen again.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Is your credit score holding you back? Are you paying more for everything just because you don't have perfect credit? Well, it's not your fault. Credit card companies are doing everything they can to keep you in debt and never let you escape. But I've got a system that can fix your credit score once and for all. And I'm going to send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system today.
My credit score is now 758. My wife and I are shouting for joy right now.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't just fix your credit score, it will permanently rebuild your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have.
Our credit score was in the low 600s and now we're at 780.
You can wipe the slate clean once and for all. Call right now and I'll rush you my free tape. For your free tape, call 1-800-900-3142. That's 1-800-900-3142. 1-800-900-3142.
Is your computer running slowly? Does it take more than 3 seconds for your email to load? Are you getting pop-ups? How about spam? Well, if you're experiencing any of these symptoms, your computer and your privacy are at risk. Because these are the telltale signs of a virus. It'll only get worse until you act. Get a free diagnosis at mycleanpc.com and optimize your PC.
I got the free diagnosis, and now my computer is lightning fast.
My computer never crashes anymore.
Talk about optimization.
My computer isn't even this fast at work.
MyCleanPC.com will remove spyware, viruses, and virus-infected emails, all while optimizing your PC performance. It's all-in-one protection, and it's been raved about by USA Today and Computer World. The diagnosis is free. Just log on to MyCleanPC.com. Even if you have antivirus software, your computer could still be infected. Find out instantly with a free comprehensive diagnosis at MyCleanPC.com. If your computer is running slowly or you're still getting pop-ups, you need to get your free diagnosis from MyCleanPC.com. That's MyCleanPC.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Beaverton Lodge Retirement Residence offers independent senior living in the heart of Beaverton within walking distance of the Beaverton Library and the Stuhr Senior Center. Visit and discover the affordable luxury of Beaverton Lodge with its spacious apartments, large decks, and in-room storage, all in a woodland setting. Visit their website at beavertonlodge.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman program. And Arnold Bud Fultz is on the line with us, former airline executive who grew up in the heart of Kentucky coal country. And that has led to his being now the author of a brilliant analysis of the whole coal situation. It's called Fixing the Ungodly Mess, A Pathway to Change. And Bud, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
And great to have you with us. And your website, by the way, is budfultz, budfultz.com. And people can learn all about this over there. So tell us, what is the situation? What I found very interesting was your personal story on this, how you came to this realization of what a disaster the coal industry in the United States is.
Yeah, I escaped from the coal fields after high school in the 50s and went out into a broader world, and although I'm certainly not wealthy, I'm not hurting for money. But I kept close to my roots. And over a period of time, decades really, I've seen unemployment and deprivation turn into outright, in some cases, hate to say it, but terrorism against citizens in the coal fields. So
by the coal companies.
Pardon me?
By the coal companies?
Coal companies in collusion with government. The laws are skewed, mm-hmm. and not only against the people, but for the environment, which is being devastated to extract coal.
Yeah. We have an unholy addiction in this country. Coal is marketed as a cheap source of energy, but that word cheap does not include in it the cost of millions or thousands of tons of mercury dumped into our rivers and streams and waters. It doesn't include the destruction of the land and the people and the cultures of the area. It doesn't include the cost of millions of cancers caused by burning this stuff. What am I missing here, Bud?
You summed it up very well. In the United States, and you mentioned mercury, 96,000 pounds of mercury are spewed into the air every year from coal plants. Up to 40,000 Americans die every year, they're killed every year, from coal pollution. 40% of all greenhouse gases in this country come from coal. Clean coal is a very cruel hoax. It simply doesn't exist despite more than $100 billion federal tax dollars spent subsidizing the coal industry to try to find a way to have clean coal. But even if they did, Tom, at the source of coal, coal is synonymous with intergenerational poverty. It's synonymous with over 1,200 miles of rivers and streams in Kentucky and West Virginia have been buried. Forests bigger than the entire state of Delaware have been annihilated by what's called mountaintop removal mining.
Yeah. And yet, Howard, there. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, 53% of our electricity comes from coal. Meanwhile, viable alternatives, renewable energy, sets on the shelf undeveloped.
Yeah, and it's on the shelf and it's not being used. I'll tell you, Bud, right now there is an industry that is no doubt willing to cross my palm with cash if I was going to go out there and hustle clean coal. I don't get it how, you know, I think this is reality.org. Is that the website that lays this stuff out? Have you seen this?
I've seen that one. It's one of many. The reality one is relatively new. There are others. They're so fragmented, and
yeah,
they have
just
trouble getting their message out against a united coal industry in collusion with federal and state government.
Yeah, this is just a mind-bogglingly powerful industry. It blows my mind, and the people's lives are at stake. And so what can we do? We're talking with Bud Fultz. BUDFULTZ.com is his website. His book, a new book, Fixing the Ungodly Mess, A Pathway to Change. Bud, in minute and a half or so, 2 minutes we've got left here, what do we do?
My book outlines the causes, and I've already mentioned to you the collusion. But in my book, I use the Appalachian coal fields for an overriding theme of a growing decline of the middle class. I go into fossil fuels, unaffordable health care, and lagging education systems, which have been in the coal fields for decades. I offer up very clear, viable solutions for getting off of fossil fuels, making health care more affordable, and bringing our education systems into the 21st century. I also quantify them, how we pay for them. So it's all in that book.
Yeah. But for those people who can't read the book, can you give me one? I mean, you know, we have just a few seconds left here.
Sure. For renewable energy, wind is available. The Northern Plains State called the Middle East for wind. Mm-hmm. Across the United States, wind is available. Nuclear is available. Hydro energy is available.
Solar is certainly available, particularly in the Southwest.
Yeah.
So we have a variety of things. Bud, thanks very much for being on and for writing this book, Fixing the Ungodly Mess, A Pathway to Change, that just lays out in pretty horrifying detail the consequences of America's addiction to coal for electricity. BudFultz.com, the website. Thanks, Bud.
Thanks so much, Tom. Bye-bye.
27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking the truth to the multinational corporations, generally would really rather you didn't know all about. Our conservative alert for the day, George Will. This actually surprised me. Apparently, George Will had outsourced to an intern to check the internets to find out about global warming. And in a recent nationally syndicated column, conservative columnist George Will chastised Energy Secretary Stephen Chu for doomsaying about global warming, saying that it's just eco-pessimism, and saying, to quote George Will, according to the University of Illinois Arctic Climate Research Center, global sea ice levels are now equal to those of 1979. Well, TPM Muckraker made the call to the Arctic Climate Research Center and said, "Do you guys actually say this?" And I said, "No, we didn't. didn't. Actually, our data show that as of February 15, 1979, global sea ice was 16.79 million square kilometers, and today is 15.45 million square kilometers. That's a loss of 1.3 million square kilometers, which is about the size of Texas, California, and Oklahoma combined, missing from the global sea ice. George Will, please don't outsource your climate change research to interns. And not to diss interns, you know, fine thing. In fact, we should probably have a couple here. But please don't do it anymore. Check it out yourself. Beth in Minneapolis. Hey, Beth, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to add something to your conversation about 2012.
Sure.
There are a couple of scientific things that are worth noting. NASA particularly has some forecasts that are kind of disquieting, I would say, at the least. They are predicting that solar storms will become unprecedented in their ferocity and the disruption that they will cause on Earth with our magnetosphere, with our communications, our satellites, with so many things. That will be one problem. And it will, 2012 is the year that it is supposed to peak. The other thing they are predicting at NASA is that there will be a magnetic pole reversal, which will really throw things, you know, into chaos.
Yeah, Beth, I'm pretty sure NASA's not predicting a pole reversal. I have heard the thing about, you know, the solar radiation increasing, and that would might tie in with some sort of planetary alignment that ancient astronomers would have, been able to calculate was going to happen. And you know, I've read for years literature about the pole reversal, but I don't think NASA's predicting that.
Well, I will send you a link that will show you that they are.
Okay, I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, and also, I tend to believe that cultural myths have some basis in truth. Mm-hmm. Ever since Heinrich Schliemann discovered Troy and proved that it wasn't just a cultural fairy tale,
right.
I think there might be some iota of truth. I'm not saying there always is, but I'm saying it's worth looking at.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there's a large iota of truth to this. I think that this is a very significant thing. I think that we stand as an individual culture and as a race, as the human race, at a significant threshold point right now.
Yeah,
and over the next 3, 4, 5 years, that we're getting closer and closer to it, because there are critical masses accruing in a whole variety of areas, that from economic to cultural to religious to biological to, you know, the ecosphere. I mean, just a whole bunch of them. Beth, thank you for the call. Well said. I appreciate it. Angus in Minneapolis. Hey, Angus, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. First of all, thank you for all your good work. I've been hearing a lot of talk about, you know, the media being in trouble and so many people losing their jobs in it and newspapers crashing and burning. And I believe that without a free and independent media, democracy's in real trouble.
Yep.
So I was thinking perhaps what we should do is use the antitrust laws to break the stranglehold of conglomerates on the media, and then perhaps offer federal vouchers to every person in the country so they can get one national and one local newspaper and got federal vouchers for them.
You know, there's a variation of this that the founders had in place at the founding of this country that is still in law. And there were actually two for the first, I don't know, 40, 50 years of this country's existence. The federal government subsidized the manufacture of newsprint so that newspapers could print their newspapers very inexpensively. And they did that because they felt it was so important that people have access to information. The other was that there was a special postal rate where the post office would deliver newspapers at an absurdly low rate that did not even remotely reflect the cost of carrying the weight of the newspaper. And to this day, you can, like, for example, we live in Oregon now. We used to live in Vermont, and for the last couple of months before we moved out to Oregon, when we were living in Vermont and we knew we were going to move, I subscribed to the local Oregon paper, the Oregonian, and in Vermont, and they sent it by this special fourth-class rate that's just for newspapers. And every day in Vermont, I mean, it took 3 or 4 days for them to get there, but every day the Oregon newspaper would show up, and you know, it cost them pennies to mail the thing, and a newspaper is a big, heavy thing. You know, it's basically like a package all the way across the country. So that subsidy is still in place, and what you're suggesting is just extending that, because now we've replaced the post office with the person who comes around and drops the newspaper off on your doorstep, you know, the carrier, as it were. So, yeah, it's an interesting idea, Angus. Thanks for sharing that with us. Very interesting idea. Steve in Detroit, listening on WDTW. Hey, Steve, what's up?
How are you doing today, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better, Steve. How about you?
Well, besides gnashing my teeth in anger over the mainstream media, you've been quoting FDR's term, economic royalists. And I'd like to point out, in the Middle Ages, it was common for royal courts to have fools in attendance to entertain the royalty, because, you know, they were so depressed. They had all these masses of poor and peasants that were unhappy, and they couldn't understand why. So they had these fools that would entertain them and chide these masses and how out of touch they were and how great the royals are. And I'd like to make an analogy between our mainstream media and those fools, because that's really what they seem to be looking at, like, at this point. And I wonder...
The court justice. Here's an interesting. Let me flip that upside down, Steve, for a second. I think that if you were to make a parallel between what's going on today and Rome's notion of bread and circus, that if you just make sure people are entertained and fed, you don't have to worry about them, it would be quite accurate. My understanding, and this may be one of those, you know, vanishing hitchhiker stories. This might just be a mythology, but I've read it in several places over the years, was that the court jester was the one person in the king's court who could say anything without being held to account for it. So, you know, the king typically would surround himself, or the queen would surround herself, with basically yes men, people who were, you know, walking on pins all the time, because the king could simply say off with his head and that was the end of it. But the king needed some way to find out what was actually going on in the real world. And so, and what the objections of the peasant, because no king wanted to be the subject of a revolution. And so the way to do that was to have the court jester, the court fool, who would be able to make jokes about and speak the unspeakable truths, which is, when you think about it, what our comedians do today, you know, the best of them, the George Carlins, you know, who we miss terribly, they spoke the unspeakable truths. And that's what the court jester did, and it was a way for the king to actually keep some calibrated sense of what's really going on. And so maybe we need to bring back the court jester. Certainly, I'd say the Bush administration, they needed a court jester. They needed somebody telling them the truth of what was going on, where George couldn't say off with his head or you know, kick this guy out of the room. But you raise a good one, Steve, and I thought-provoking. Thank you very much. Carl in Portland, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Carl, what's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, I was wondering about what you thought the ramifications of a boycott of paying our premiums to our health care companies might do for establishing some sort of national health care.
I think they have such a stranglehold on us, and we have such a poorly organized movement of, you know, the middle class in the United States, that they would just say, you know, you'd have a whole lot of people who wouldn't get health care. I mean, if we had 25% unionization in the country like we did when Reagan came into office, and, you know, the two or three biggest unions got together, or organizations of unions, if Change to Win and AFL-CIO got together and said, okay, we're going to take a quarter of the workforce in America and they're going to do something about this, then, yeah, you'd see some change immediately. But Reagan and the two Bushes have done a very, very good job of destroying the ability of organized movements in the United States to challenge corporate power. And so I don't think it would work. Got a plan B?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it would work any more than we tried boycotts on gasoline, because people can't get by without it. But to the point now where they're the only companies making a big profit, and as long as we have this momentum going, it's a little bit anti-corporation.
Well, I think the thing we need to do is infiltrate and take over the Democratic Party, participate in the political process, push our politicians to do the right thing, and let's get a national health care system. I mean, that's really the only tool we have right now. And there is a mechanism for us all to be organized, and that is to participate in the political process. Join the Green Party, join the Democratic Party, join the Republican Party for that matter. Get out there, get active, get involved, show up every month at the meetings, and start speaking out. The people in the party are the ones the politicians listen to first. You should be one of those people.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Tom Hartman here. Hey, guys, do you know the symptoms of an enlarged prostate? Like it or not, you probably will, because eventually it's going to happen to most of us as we get older. If you're urinating more frequently, especially if you're waking up two, maybe three times a night to go to the bathroom, that's the first sign. Second sign might be burning, pain, or even problems in the bedroom. This is not just an old man's concern. It happens to American men more often than in other countries and can occur as young as 30. So don't ignore the symptoms. Get checkups from your doctor and order your risk-free bottle of Beta Prostate to support healthy prostate functioning. Every man should take Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate will help keep your prostate healthy, and it's a natural alternative. You don't need a prescription for it. Call now and order Beta Prostate risk-free. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Don't put this call off till tomorrow. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
What is wrong with this man, Michael Steele?
Randy Rhodes.
First of all, he told congressional Republicans the goose egg that you laid on the president's desk was just beautiful. And then he attacked Democrats for being the obstructionist.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
And the only thing worse than stupidity is being proud of your stupidity.
3 to 6.
And the only thing worse than being proud about your stupidity is being proud and hypocritical about your stupidity.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end, and when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
When I first looked into LASIK, my doctor said I'd have bad night vision. I'm glad I went to 2020 Institute for a second opinion.
LASIK at 2020 Institute has never been safer or more precise. And for a limited time only, save $1,000 off worry-free LASIK during our 2020 Institute anniversary event. With zero down and 0% interest for 2 years, LASIK has never been more affordable. Call 2020 Institute at 503-771-2020. That's 503-771-2020 or visit us at 2020institute.com.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Traveling through.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Governor Patterson of New York, he's got a new tax idea. He's got the conservatives all on Twitter, all upset about it. They're saying, holy cow, he's going to tax internet porn? Yeah, 4%. He wants to put it on internet porn. The conservatives, of course, they just don't like it because it's a tax. And, of course, and Michael Long, the chairman of the New York Conservative Party, says by taxing it, you're legitimizing it. Well, it is kind of there, isn't it? But I would just say, you know, if you're taxing it, what you're doing is you're carving out areas of the Internet that are segregated from other areas of the Internet. And I'm not sure that's such a great idea. Although there is a strong case to be made for creating a new domain, .xxx, as opposed to .com, and just move all the porn into .xxx. And then the whole thing of child safe filters and everything else becomes easy. No thought at all. No effort at all. So anyway, over the weekend, Louise and I went to see the new movie, The International. I don't know if you've seen this movie. It's based on, and it's a pretty good film. It's a thriller that is loosely based on the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, BCCI. That's not the name they give it in the movie. And while the events in the movie are, as far as I know, largely or entirely fictional, the existence of BCCI, of this bank that was created basically to launder money for terrorist groups and for third world dictators and for the intelligence services of first world countries, is real. BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, was founded. It was created back in the day, and back in the 50s, as I recall. Maybe it was the 60s. And the connections between BCCI and the Bush family are truly amazing. This thing, the bank was shut down in 1991, and at that point, by the way, between $9.5 and $15 billion had vanished, making it the biggest bank fraud in history until Henry Paulson and George W. Bush came along. But the a classified CIA memo. This is a piece written by Lucy Commissar back in 2007, published by the Interpress Service, just a basic news story about BCCI. Her point is that at the time, George W. Bush was saying that there was a connection between Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. And she says, yes, there was. They had the same banker. But so did George W. Bush and his father. She says, Ronald Reagan's Central Intelligence Agency used to run guns to Saddam Hussein and used to finance Osama bin Laden and move money in the illegal Iran-Contra operation and carry out other black agency black operations through BCCI. One of the bank's largest Saudi investors helped bail out George W. Bush's troubled oil investments. The bank was started in 1972 by a Pakistani banker, Aga Hassan Abedi, with the support of Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahyan, the ruler of Abu Dhabi and head of the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. Its corporate strategy was money laundering, and it became the banker for drugs and arms traffickers, corrupt officials, financial fraudsters, dictators, and terrorists. I mean, that was the business they were in. And the kickbacks on this, the U.S. Congressman Henry Gonzalez held a whole bunch of hearings on the Banca Nacional de Lavoro, which is the Atlanta branch of an Italian bank. It's the Italian bank, a government-owned bank. Their Atlanta branch was funneling money through BCCI to Saddam Hussein. And so he starts digging into this BNL bank and what's going on with this, and finds that 15% kickbacks were being channeled into the bank accounts of Iraqi leaders via BCCI offices in the Caymans. And who was a client of BNL? Well, Kissinger Associates. And who was on their advisory board? Henry Kissinger, who, along with Brent Scowcroft, would become George Bush Sr.'s national security advisor. And this was when the oil for food stuff was going on. It was going through BCCI. The head of the Saudi intelligence from 63 to 79, Sheikh Kamal Amman, the brother-in-law of the late Saudi King Faisal, became one of ECI's largest shareholders. He was a good friend of George Bush Sr. But it gets really interesting. Classified CIA memo on BCCI in the mid-80s talked about this. The Bush's private link, this isn't the memo, this is from the Interpress Service article. The Bush's private links to the bank passed to Bin Mahfouz through Texas businessman James R. Bath, who invested money in the United States on behalf of the Saudi regime. In 76, when Bush was the head of the CIA, the agency sold some of the planes of Air America, that was the CIA operation, a secret proprietary airline it used during the Vietnam War, to Skyway, a company owned by Bath and Bin Mahfouz. Bath then helped finance George W. Bush's oil company, Arbusto Energy, Inc., in 79 and 80. So it is downright bizarre. $25 million. The BCCI to Bush connection. Just that you can Google it. It's fun reading. And then you go see the movie The International and you go, holy cow. Coming up tomorrow, Joseph Farah, editor-in-chief of WorldNet Daily, Dan Gaynor, Business and Media Institute, and the best of the rest of the news, of course. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active. As I said, infiltrate the parties. We need us. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.